Pack your knives and stay. Top Chef, Season 13, Episode 4. It's a dry heat. It's over. It's gone. It's done. It's been put to bed. It's been cooked. And we're just getting started here at Reality Rehap Ups. I am Antonio Mazzaro, one of the co-hosts of the Top Chef Judges Roundtable here at Reality Rehap Ups. I'm joined this week by the same two co-hosts we've had so far throughout the season here on the Reality Rehap Ups. I'm joined by Kurt Clark and Mike Bloom. Guys, how are you?
I'm doing great. This was a fun little episode.
I'm going with a nouveau concept of recording this week, guys. I actually just fashioned a new microphone out of an ice cream cone and a selfie stick. So hopefully it produces the same quality and we can have a little bit of fun with this.
Oh, this is fantastic, Mike. And this, do you like recording in non-traditional ways? Is that what that is?
I mean, really, that's what California is all about, right? You know, it was a state that was founded in non-conventional ways. So I feel like it really represents the Bear State.
Well, you sound like snot on a ice cream cone, Mike. So I don't know. This is
it's
not because
I haven't taken my decongestant today.
Ah, yeah, that's very, very important. I recommend Mucinex D for all your decongestant needs. They are not a sponsor of this program. No, what we do here at Reality TV Rehap Ups, we talk about reality TV that is not part of the main Rob Has a Website kind of staple. So we don't talk about Survivor or Big Brother with Rob Sesternino. We have other hosts maybe talking about those things from time to time, but we talk about other shows like The Challenge, The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, and this season we're definitely talking about Top Chef. If you want to subscribe to our entire feed of what we're doing, you can subscribe to it. It's robhasawebsite.com/RHAPUPS, UPS, Rehap Ups, and that will get you the feed to every single one of our Reality TV Rehap Ups podcasts. So like I said, Challenge, the Top Chef, and also the RHAP Happy Hour where we talk about Survivor, Big Brother, with Big Brother Canada's own co-host with the mo-host of everything that's going on, Jordan Parhar. He hosts a weekly show on Reality Wrap Ups. Yes, Kurt Clark.
And just a quick plug, I believe that Celebrity Big Brother UK actually comes back on January 4th. So if rumors are to be rumors are true, we might be looking at a Vanilla Ice Hulk Hogan Celebrity Big Brother UK. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Oh boy, I hope there are no minorities in that that house with Hulk Hogan in there. That could get interesting pretty quickly.
Well, that's what happened with Evander Holyfield, right? He made those homophobic comments and he left the house basically because of that.
Yeah pretty much. That will be fun. And the Big Brother UK, of course, Big Brother originated in the UK. So it's always a little bit of a more interesting, I think, dynamic. And then you throw celebrities into the mix. It's a recipe for disaster. So looking forward, Kurt, to your podcast about that in the new year. And it will be available at that feed at Reality Rehap Ups. You can also interact with each of us on Twitter. I am at AC Mazzaro. That's 2 Z's, 1 R. Kurt, you are at Kurt Clark. Is that right?
Pretty much. Got in on it early.
There you go. And Mike, you are at a Mike Bloom type if someone is looking to cast someone of your type.
Yes, I did not get in on that early. So that's I had to find some sort of what I think is a somewhat witty handle as a result.
I like it. For most jewel thieves, I think it's a great handle.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So yeah, you can also interact with us on Twitter. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this season of Top Chef. We drafted teams of chefs, as you've probably heard if you've listened to our podcast at any point. But we'd like to know who your favorites are, who you think is shaping up. Because guys, I don't know about you, but even after this episode, I feel like we're still looking at a pretty wide open season.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we did have Jeremy win the elimination challenge, which gave him, you know, his second win in 4 episodes. So he might slowly be rising to the top as the front runner, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, people that were in danger last episode did very well this episode, and it seemed like vice versa. So with the exception of maybe someone like Angelina, who's still in the game, I feel like everyone else has a pretty good shot of, if not winning, at least making it far into the game.
Yeah, as much as I love my Giselle on Team Egg, she gets me worried every week.
She gets herself worried every week, Kurt. So yes, you're not in the minority there.
She got the ER probably worried this week as well, considering she had a chance of getting shards of glass in her face.
Yeah, considering and the food. The food is also not great for her this week, right? Yeah. But yeah, shards of glass flying everywhere. She turned the GoSun stove into an improvised explosive device. Not great, Bob. Like, not a great look for anybody, whether it was GoSun or Giselle or Jose Andreas. So we'll get into that for sure. We had, you know, the reason I talk about it kind of being a wide open season is I felt like last week we really saw the emergence of Chef Kwame. We saw him kind of in the Mexican team challenge be the sort of standout dish, but he didn't really get any more credit than that because their team was not very good and they were in fact on the bottom and he was the only thing that saved them. Last week he was really ascendant and cooked very good food and kind of rose to the top. He starts this episode with a little bit of a kind of a look back at that. And a look back at everything that happened. We see also that Chef Francis had been eliminated. Isaac, the Cajun man, said, I was just starting to understand her. And that made me laugh a lot.
Yeah. He's definitely emerged as the comic relief this season, I feel, especially with Francis gone. I feel like he's definitely the sense of humor. And he has a couple of quips later on in this episode as well. So he's definitely running away with the clown role.
Yeah, and I mean, thankfully, he's also cooking good food. And that, I say thankfully because he's on my team. So he was my number one draft pick, in fact. So I'm glad he's also cooking good food and doesn't seem to be not acquitting himself well, but he's certainly equipping himself well. So we'll get into that and the quips that he's making. Have you guys ever been to Palm Springs, either one of you?
Once, yeah. And I'm more familiar, I think, with Palm Desert, which I think is technically maybe where they are at. But yeah, just one time when I was living in L.A.
Did you go to Desert Adventures?
I did not go to Desert Adventures. Growing up in West Michigan, you've got true kind of dune riding there and dune buggies. This was kind of weak by comparison, but much more beautiful.
Yeah, it's weird. I Googled La Quinta Inn, and it just looked like a cheap hotel. So I'm very confused.
I was wondering if they were related myself.
I mean, it's got to be the same place, right? Like, I don't know. Yeah, I've never been to Palm Springs either. According to Jason, it's just all old gays who sit in the sun and drink white wine spritzers?
Yeah, lots of gay, lots of old people.
Yeah, yeah. So
which sounds like Bravo's demographic.
Fair point, Mike. You're really hitting right at the kind of core of what Bravo's audience is, so
yeah, exactly. Palm Springs population is gonna rise substantially after this episode aired.
Yeah, this is just sponsored content after all. We don't even yeah. realize it. It's like, oh, the La Quinta Resort. Oh, I'd like to stay there.
Yeah. Yeah, they suddenly see an uptick in all of the kind of off highway La Quintas and wondering why is this happening.
I don't know. Everyone's asking about a quick fire. I don't understand what that is. I'm worried there's a lot of arsonists that are La Quinta Inn. And sweet. So yeah, that is
we do not have solar ovens. Stop asking us about that. And no, you cannot cook on our golf course.
Why are 12 people trying to get in a tiny hot tub at once? This is awesome. So yeah, I mean, people are happy to be there, though. People are happy. Wesley, in fact, feels very lucky to be there because, you know, he says at the beginning of this episode, like, he's cooked some bad food and he's been very close to going home. And it reminds him of the surprise of the episode in my book.
Yes.
Of his time as a collegiate pole vaulter. Did either of you guys see this coming?
No, I did not. God bless my Wesley. I picked an amazing team.
Yeah.
But I wanted to hear, you know, what happened after. I thought, and this is probably a horrible part of me, but I thought for a second he was going to be like, I was a collegiate pole vaulter and then something happened and I just let myself go. But it just turned into a general, you know, coach's inspiration story where he tells him, like, you know, don't overthink things when you want to make it over the bar. But now I'm sort of intrigued as to, like, where that athleticism sort of went. Did he just enlist in culinary school and sort of left that behind?
I bet so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, like, I enjoy food enough as it is, and I'm not even a cook. I think, like, if I was a professional chef, I'd be, you know, tasting everything as well. I mean, you know, I think that it's kind of, I think it's probably work to be incredibly fit as a chef. I mean, obviously there are, you know, even some on the show, but I just think, yeah, it's like, you know, and then I dropped that and became a chef. So be it.
Yeah, a lot of long nights in the kitchen, a lot of really long shifts, a lot of time where you're probably eating super late after your shift is over and then maybe crashing. Like, I think there's a lot of long hours and there's a lot of easiness. And then, of course, when you're an athlete, especially if you're muscular, if you stop being an athlete in that way for a little while, it does kind of tend to turn into non-muscle, and that can be difficult. So I'm example number one on that list, so I'm not judging anybody. Although pole vaulter is certainly the last thing I would have thought. If Wesley had said, like, I was a collegiate shot putter and I, you know, threw the rock around, this big ball, I threw it around when I was home, I would be like, okay, yeah, that happened. But no, pole vaulting, like, literally involving using a wooden / fiber pole to, like, lift yourself skyward over a bar. So I would love to see footage, not just pictures of that. So,
yeah, I would want him to be, I want Wesley to be eliminated only for in Last Chance Kitchen for Tom to say, okay, Wesley, to get to the pantry and back, you have to pole vault over this 6-foot bar to get there.
I can do it as a pole vaulter for years. Yeah, that would be great. I'd like to see that. And I think it's cool, man. Like, it's an interesting kind of thing. It's the last thing I would have seen coming, like I said. So, interesting character note. What's next, Kurt? Is Chef Isaac going to reveal himself to be like a children's magician or something?
Circus clown.
Circus clown. I still think either of those two is more believable. So, I don't know. But yeah, that happened. They're out in the desert where there is no pole vaulting, as far as I know. They're going to Palm Springs. They're going to go ride in the desert adventure and be standing on top of the San Andreas Fault and all of it. Kwame does not want to cook any little desert creatures, no scorpions, spiders.
Mike Holloway would not be happy with Kwame.
Yeah, well, and I guess Jeremy from Survivor would want that kind of extra balut. So who knows? The bonus balut. Kwame doesn't want any part of that weird stuff. He wants to just cook his food that apparently does not include that. They run into sort of, I think, Top Chef Notorious, just somebody who's been on a lot of seasons as a judge, Chef Jose Andreas. He's standing in the desert with Padma. Marjorie, it turns out, has worked for Jose Andreas, and they're about to shake things up, Padma says. So many puns in this episode, guys.
Was the choice of Jose Andreas and being at the San Andreas Fault, was that intentional?
It almost has to be, right?
It has to be.
I'm hoping so.
I was really sad that we didn't see Dwayne The Rock Johnson as a judge for the San Andreas Challenge.
Yeah, so was Philip, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I was going, Philip.
A rock for The Rock.
Yeah, Philip was very sad. Do you smell what my rock is cooking? He should have said that. So.
Because it's not this oyster.
Yes, because I made it cold. No. There's a restaurant in Chicago that was, this is, predates a lot of this crazy stuff. That's just almost probably 20 years ago that I went to when I was very, you know, probably around, you know, like 16, 17, whatever. And they were plating on rocks and the rocks were hot. And, you know, this is a thing now, but you were getting strips of raw meat and you were served a hot rock and you would cook the meat yourself on the hot rock. And that I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. Now, I feel like you could do that at home with the microwave. So I don't know. This guy, Philippi's, I don't know. Philip is interesting. He's earnest. I'm starting to think he's earnest, and I'm starting to see through his veneer of like California bro a little bit and see like a kind of earnest, insecure guy behind that, at least how it's coming off on TV. So I don't know. We'll get into Philip a little bit more, but I'm softening on Philip a little bit.
I think you're just trying to shift your Garrett love somewhere else now. I think this is a little bit of transference we're seeing here.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe he's my rebound guy.
I would say that I think Philip made this episode personally. I think he produced two of the laugh out loud moments for me. And again, maybe I'm biased because he's on my team. But I mean, to go along with what you just said, Antonio, I would much rather have delusional chef over asshole chef any day of the week. He's actually showing like, you know, coach like tendencies almost in the stuff that he's attempting to do and thinks that he can do. So I'm very delighted in Philip, especially this episode.
Why settle for one when you can have a delusional asshole chef? Let's be real.
Yeah, and I think we're just going to be debating over the level of a-hole that is present in what Philip is doing, because this is a week where I didn't see a lot of a-hole and I saw a lot of just kind of sad. And we'll just have to see where that goes.
And there was some nice, the comic relief with plating that I'm sure that we'll get to later. I definitely think that he definitely skews more toward well-meaning, slightly delusional than the douche asshole side of things. I think he has definitely shifted.
It is hard to be well-meaning and delusional and funny when you're also talking about how you cook for the VIP tent at Coachella. So
that was my laugh out loud moment, to be completely honest. It was like,
of course he did.
Things right? I'm not surprised by.
Right. Yep.
This is the polar opposite to the pole vault with Wesley. This is like things that you definitely saw.
I actually love that, because we have Wesley's, I was a collegiate pole vaulter. We have Chad's, my wife does volunteer work in Nicaragua, and then Phillips, I cook for Coachella.
And we've got the whole spectrum covered.
It's a nice cast.
And this cast has this interesting challenge here that they're facing in the desert adventures. They see a lot of solar ovens and solar stoves. The Go Sun is the tubular oven. Is actually a fun fact, someone I went to law school with was on the board and one of the co-founders the company that made the Go Sun, and they funded it initially on Kickstarter. They're very big about the environmental and kind of ways it can be used in places like Haiti when people can't get access to power after an emergency. So that is very much part of their company's DNA and their mission statement. So this is a, well, we'll talk about how good of a commercial this is for their product.
well, caution may explode.
Yeah, throughout the show here. But yeah, I mean, pressure cookers can be made into, unfortunately, can be made into explosive devices, as we saw. So it stands to reason a solar oven could be as well. There's a knife draw. I'm a big fan of the knife draw. Nice to see that kind of randomness in play. Giselle, Kurt, your team egg, Giselle, does not want the oven. She does not want the oven. Of course, not wanting the oven is the way to ensure that she's going to get it. And Jose Andreas kind of warns them, like, listen, you better point these things at the sun because they're solar. And some of the contestants don't seem to grasp that very well. Shocks me.
Yeah, yeah. I have to agree. I think I would have been more comfortable with at least the stove looked somewhat familiar. The oven looked a little like you were cooking like inside a lightsaber almost.
Yeah, or inside like a hair straightener.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it was a
neither of which I've used.
I don't believe either of those things.
Two things that have never been in my kitchen, Alex.
Yes, exactly. Way to go, Cliffy. It's your dream board here. Yeah. I agree with you guys. I think that the oven looks a little weirder. I thought that when I saw it on the Kickstarter page, it did look very lightsaber-esque. Chef Isaac even, in fact, refers to it as a lightsaber as he's kind of pulling it out and swashbuckling with it. So there is that lightsaber element to it, I think, which a lot of people see as cool. A lot of the chefs, some of the chefs seem to think of it as daunting with varying degrees of success. Grayson, for example, she has the tubular oven. She's never cooked with the sun, she says, except for frying an egg on asphalt as a kid. And Giselle is jealous that Grayson had access to that egg. And so Grayson says she's going to cook.
Aww.
Yeah, there we go. We're going to smash cut to that. So Grayson is going to cook some skirt steak with a salad. And we've seen some other chefs here. Jason's going to cook a insalata rusca, which is like a Russian salad, like a classic Spanish dish. Kwame is cooking what I think is a really kind of good flavor combo. He's using chorizo stuffed dates. That is something that I think always works. And, you know, we've got other chefs really kind of stepping up. Carl really liked the tech. And Isaac is cooking cornbread. Did you guys think that was a big risk, cooking cornbread in this oven? Did you think that was going to come to be something more than it was?
I would say so, because I mean, to cook something in an oven is one thing. To try to bake using the sun, I feel like is on paper, a near impossible task. And I was, you know, I admonished Grayson before when she said even with the oven, she was going to try cooking her skirt steak, because I feel like the stove would have probably been a better way to cook that type of meat, but she still went forward with it. To have Isaac do this was a huge risk, which I guess is something you can do in the quick fire. I don't think he would try to do something like this in the elimination challenge, but even though he didn't win, it ended up working marvelously for him.
Yeah. It's like, I think the task of using it to make cornbread was, like you said, kind of an uphill climb and very impressive that he did so successfully. But I think, you know, if I didn't know what the cooking method was, I don't know if I would have been as excited about cornbread as I would have some of the other dishes, just in terms of a pure output-based item.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, I mean, I don't know what a good meal to cook in that tubular oven is. If you go to their website, they have a lot of suggestions, and I'm sure the chefs didn't have access to that.
Yeah.
We didn't really see
there's a solar-powered computer off to the side that they could use to search the net.
Yeah.
But angle it towards the sun.
Angle it towards the sun.
Oh, no, I'm not getting the internet. This is only 14.4 dial-up. This is crazy. No,
don't pour liquid on it.
but I don't know. We didn't really get information about what proteins or what stuff they had access to, which is odd because they really are out in the middle of the desert. So I don't know how limited they were or weren't. Cornbread is a very interesting choice in light of that, but we saw proteins.
They said that, you know, a couple people had there was bacon, there was chorizo, someone used halibut, some the skirt steak. So it looks like they did have access to proteins. It's just that Isaac chose to go with the cornbread. I tried to make note on on which of the dishes I would have been most excited to go with. And I think for me, it was the I had down at Carl's making the bacon wrapped dates with chorizo and pistachios, which I've done bacon wrapped dates myself, actually, but stuffed them with Parmesan. But the chorizo and pistachios, I was like, this is something that I would actually be really interested in trying.
Yeah, me too. That was actually my number one as well. Bacon wrap date is a delicious bite. You can stuff it with just about anything, but chorizo is a good stuffer, or just any kind of sausage, pistachio, I think would really set that off. So, yeah, anytime you're at a restaurant, even if it doesn't sound like something you would normally get because you don't eat dates or because you don't, you know, it's just not something that's on your radar, I urge you guys to try a bacon wrap date. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
So you guys weren't attracted to Philip's snot on a rock?
I don't like to think of things I could have made on accident, Mike, as something that is food. So,
Philip, that's why Philip cooks in happy accidents. He makes you look at life's little situations and then put it on a plate. As we see later when it looks like he spit in a bowl and then gave it to them.
You're dropping flavor bombs. And he might have been doing that under that curtain. We just don't know, Mike. Like,
give me just a minute.
when they had like the close-up of the dish, and I just had to pause it and just started laughing because it just looked, I mean, it looked like poop on a rock, to be completely honest. It was like, I was like, oh, I cannot wait for the and Padma, like, usually they're very blunt with the chefs. There were a couple times where she had to like actually save her commentary for as she was walking away. And like Philip, what was that you just said? I wouldn't have been surprised if he had kind of pulled that out. But yeah, she had to. Was it the? I think the snot in a rock comment was one of those walking away.
As she was walking away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, of all the people, like, if you want to serve that to Chef Jose Andreas, he's not going to react to it the same way Padma is. Padma's going to have a big problem with that. And you just have to know your audience more than anything. I think Philip wants Padma to like things that he tells her to like. It's just never going to work that way. Yeah. Like, you have to make things in a way that Padma will like them, or you, good luck.
Do not try to change her.
Yes. Do not taunt Padma. This is not going to work. This is Padma 2.0. Like, she's already evolved. Like, this is what it is.
Do not. So, she's the happy fun ball of the judges.
Exactly. Padma is filled with a glowing substance that fell to the earth. And so it is interesting to see it. I laughed at the Top Chef editing. Always a really well-edited show, like we've talked about on this podcast, because Giselle wants to boil couscous in the tube. And she says, I know how to cook. And right as soon as she says that, her tube explodes.
Now, okay. Assuming they – was this really a dumb move? Marjorie seemed to think so. But unless they were specifically – like, I don't know if this was like – I did not sit there and say, oh, what were you thinking trying to put water in this? Like, unless they were specifically told not to, was this a what were you thinking move? Or is this kind of a literally, well, I guess the learn as you go.
Mike, when you boil water at home, do you just take a glass out of your cabinet and put it on the stove and just boil right in the glass?
I do, and I have the medical records to prove it. That's exactly the point, is I think it's just generally a bad idea to boil any sort of liquid in glass, and maybe the sun was getting to Giselle at that moment, but you would think, like, off the top of your head, oh, maybe I shouldn't use this entirely glass tube to boil these liquids.
Yeah, I don't think, I think I just didn't realize that it was a glass tube until it exploded and there was glass everywhere. I thought it was a metal trough that slid in there, but I guess it was more like how they say, like, for glass lined thermoses, that it's, you do not fill with hot liquid or because it could explode or something or shatter, or do not, there's some glass thermoses you're not supposed to like wash in hot water or something like that, because the glass inside of it might crack or explode or something. But I did not realize it was glass until it exploded.
Yeah, glass doesn't react well generally to mixes in temperature. So if you have a really hot liquid in there, and then you pour the hot liquid out and immediately put cold liquid in it, that change in temperatures will usually cause a problem. Conversely, if it's really cold and you put hot in there, that could cause a problem. I think generally speaking, it's the don't boil in glass thing that's in play here. I don't really blame Giselle for thinking that this oven might be like a Pyrex type thing, might be a little different scenario where it can take that. But they must have, I mean, it does seem like Marjorie's really throwing some shade and calling it dumb in the confessional. So,
didn't Jose also describe the oven saying like, oh, it's a glass tube, around these solar panels. So maybe people didn't seem like people paid attention to, they had some very selective hearing with the instructions. You know, Padma seemed to kind of patronize her for not angling her stove towards the sun, or her oven towards the sun. But yeah, I guess I'm probably giving Giselle the most shade out of all of us here, but you're in the middle of a competition. I can imagine making an impulsive decision might come back to haunt you.
And it didn't just like crack or break. Like this was like, you know how the like in Buffy, how when you kill the vampire, the entire thing just kind of like disintegrates and falls to pieces. Like this was the same sort of thing where it literally just the entire thing just like, I was like, poof, shatter, fall, and like nothing left.
Yeah, the tube just said, nope.
Nope, we're not going to do this anymore. So yeah, you're right. And I like to throw in shade, Mike, because shade in this challenge is like, it means no cooking. So
yeah,
that really works here.
I'm surprised it didn't fall into too much other. Again, I haven't been out to California too many times, but you would think that like they get at least a little bit of cloud cover and that would cause some drama. But I'm very surprised that the sun stayed out in its entirety for the entire, 30 minutes they had?
That's just saying, like, in Palm Desert, it tends to stay very, very sunny. I mean, you're so far inland there, and just the heat, it's usually not that cloudy. That would have sucked. Like, if for some reason they had planned this challenge for this day and they had no other options, and they're like, and it's completely overcast.
It doesn't rain in California anymore. They're done with that. They're over the raining thing. They just got rid of it. So
yeah, I can't wait for the drought challenge coming up later this season.
You must cook with no liquid.
You must create water.
Yes, this is the future. So let's figure this out from now. We have Chef Jose Aqua here with us, and he's going to figure out how this challenge works. Yeah, I don't know. It is interesting. Giselle is like, she's even upset. She's like, I broke his little oven, and she's like patronizing the oven as she talks about it. So it's like, maybe I think the issue with Grayson and with Giselle and with a couple of these other chefs is that they looked at what they were given and they kind of rejected it. And I think this is kind of the story of Grayson throughout this season, just kind of rejecting the premises that are put in front of her because she doesn't like them. And it's like almost like she's never seen Top Chef before, which we know to not be true.
Yeah.
But this is Top Chef is about taking something crazy and doing, whether it's cooking on a cruise ship with whatever food you find on a ferry or, cooking like with no utensils or instruments or whatever, like you make do. And I got to say, the fact that most of the chefs here seem to be able to put out some pretty good food with the stove and the oven tells me that the chefs who didn't, it was really on them for not embracing the challenge.
Yeah, you definitely see with Grayson, the more unconventional the situation is, the more uncomfortable she is. The more uncomfortable she is, the more she just kind of reacts and pushes it away.
Yeah, she's a Top Chef atheist, basically. Anytime some sort of something happens, she's like, oh, no, I don't like that. I disagree with you.
Does that make Tom Colicchio God?
Well, that's not the only thing,
Yeah, exactly. You just gave him a more of a godlike complex than he already had, Kurt.
Sorry. Obviously, the piercing blue eyes and the sitting on high and judging is also, because God has piercing blue eyes, right? We're on the same page about that.
And of course, he favored man because God created men first.
Yeah, obviously. So we're really, this is it. And God also is well known for a series of restaurants that he owns throughout the country. So
popular in the bear community.
Yes, God is. Yeah, very much. This is all. You're right. So very. We're all. We putting it all together really here right now. God also Italian. So this makes a ton of sense.
This is a proven fact.
Yes, this makes a ton of sense. So is everyone knows this.
So is the flying spaghetti monster, right? So we've got all sorts of religions in play if we go Italian.
That is true. We've got and with the Catholicism and the Pope, we've really, us Italians have got a corner on the market. So,
nice.
But Colicchio is our God. So there we go. Speaking of unconventional, not going well, and bad decisions that you can make, Philip's going to Philip. Philip decides he's going to go into the desert and just pick up rocks off the ground.
Did you think he was going for a rock when he initially? I was looking at that grass on the side of the hill.
Oh, yeah. It worked well the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is foraging for plates instead of food, which is, I think, just as bad of a decision, ultimately. I love that they had his two bros kind of come in. Chad says, "What the hell are you doing, bro?" And Chef Amar says, "What's wrong with you, bro?" So it's like the bros have come out to play, and they're mocking their other bro. And it is interesting because we see Philip going to Philip, and Philip is picking out a rock to plate on, which we'll talk about the efficacy of momentarily here. But Wesley's not going to Wesley. Corcino is not going to Corcino. He wants to keep a clean station today, and he wants to get credit for that. And I applaud Wesley. I think he's recognizing what gets him a little rattled and little things that are signposts for that being rattled and how that impacts his food. So I like he's going front foot here. On the day after he almost gets eliminated, and he wants to start by making nice food at the quick fire and by cleaning up his station. And we're going to see that he makes the top three and ultimately wins this challenge. So I think that Wesley's focus here is well received. It's the opposite of Philip. Like, he's doing something that is not what he's typically done on this show. And it's working out well for him.
And I'd even say he's like also a little bit of a foil to Angelina, where like we've seen that, you know, she's been critiqued as a relatively new chef for trying to kind of overcomplicate things in order to impress. Whereas Wesley, I think, you know, very vocally at this challenge says, you know, I'm just going to use simple ingredients and blow people away with them. So I think there's also kind of a nice comparison there. But yeah, I was, you know, very impressed. And he also kind of, you know, calls out that he was really kind of taken with the cooking implements. And wouldn't it be nice if the winner of this quickfire also got to take one of these home? Because that would be pretty sweet. And you kind of then that started to did lay a little bit of a trail of breadcrumbs mm-hmm. for me.
And it's interesting that our past two quickfire winners have sort of almost had this redemption story where both of them finished in the bottom the previous round and felt like they had to make up some ground and impress. And I wonder if this will continue to be a trend, because it doesn't happen. It happens, I guess, semi-frequently with quick fires, but not so much that we can call it like a definitive editing trend.
Yeah, it is true. I agree. I don't think it's necessarily definitive, but it is happening.
Except the last quick fire winner then went home the next week. So let's with Grayson. Didn't she win quick fire last week?
She won quick fire last week. Yeah.
So I'm hoping that this is not a one, because I remember last week we talked about, is this the redemption story from Grayson? Is this like showing, you know, is she now the force to be reckoned with? And we saw that was not the case in terms of at least the main show. She has that chance in Last Catch Kitchen. Hoping this is also not a one and done for Wesley.
Yeah, the force awakened with Grayson, but it went back to sleep. It was very tired. I'm hoping it's not a one and done for Wesley either. I think that we've talked a ton about it on this podcast, and you guys are kind of getting at it here, which is that there's just a lot of talented chefs, and each chef has really kind of had various moments to shine. There are a couple that are still a little bit in the background that haven't really popped off the screen yet, like Chef Chad. Chad.
Chad.
he's so background.
He's so forgettable. You forgot that his name.
I forgot who he is. I just mean thinking of he's got a beard. He's got Mexican restaurants. He doesn't drink. I mean, I know facts about him, but his food hasn't totally popped off the screen yet. Tom did say that he thought he deserved to be kind of in the top three in the first group challenge that they did, even though he didn't make it. So we know he cooks well, and we know he's bringing some things to bear, but he hasn't really been in the top yet otherwise. So there are a few chefs that haven't rotated through, but by and large, I feel like everybody's had a kind of a lot of time to shine, and there aren't too many people who are really struggling. There are maybe only three or four. And so this is shaping up to be a really continually good season. I think the food, even in this challenge, shows that through. Isaac makes this hatch pepper and manchego cheese cornbread with a smoked butter and vanilla milk. Jose Andreas loves it. He says he likes the crunchiness with the milkiness in the mouth, which he needs to be careful not to go full bloom there.
This is Bravo. The demographic loved it.
Yes. So yeah, that is happening. Jeremy makes a halibut with a pickled mushroom and a habanero tomato vinaigrette. I rewound this several times and looked at this. I looked at the dish. I looked at the description. I listened to his description. He says he makes halibut with pickled mushroom and a habanero tomato vinaigrette. And then Chef Jose Andreas says, "I really like the crunchiness of the cauliflower." So I don't know.
And then Philip comes in saying like, "Oh, great. Then you're going to love this idea."
Yeah, I just don't know what Jose Andreas thought he was eating if cauliflower is not mentioned in the show's description or in Jeremy's description, and you can't really see it in the dish. So maybe there was cauliflower in there. Maybe there wasn't. I don't know where it sneaks in. But Jose Andreas liked the crunchiness of it. So Jeremy rolls with it. He takes the compliment, and that's fine. Carl does make that date we talked about, chorizo, bacon wrap. That's a great bite.
Yeah.
Grayson gets called out by Padma, as you mentioned, Kurt, for, you know, not really focusing the oven correctly. But
I turned it a little bit. I turned it
just a little. Yeah. Come on.
Grayson, what are you doing?
Don't worry, Mike. She's not on your team. It's fine. But yeah, there's apparently, though, her food wasn't bad. Ultimately, yeah. Jose Andreas says it's a nice bite. And I think we are talking, Mike, you mentioned this last week. You sportsed us and said that we might we're seeing a season that might be like a game of inches. And I think that that's been at least in part true. We'll talk about this more on the Elimination Challenge. But the general feedback from the Elimination Challenge was that all teams made very good dishes and they were satisfied with the food. And it really was some kernels of corn that ultimately gets Grayson sent home. So I think we really are seeing a pretty high standard season of Top Chef. And it's been very exciting so far, I think, to watch it play out. But yeah, we saw the top three ultimately were Isaac, Wesley, and Jeremy. The bottom three were Phillip's snot on a rock. And when, you know, that's plated, Padma immediately does not like it. We get a shot of Chef Amar looking like a Sith Lord with a black towel over his head. He's throwing shade at Phillip in the sun. So, like, people are observing Phillip being Phillip.
How can we make all these Star Wars references without mentioning I hate sand already?
Yeah, exactly. There's that happening as well. So no sand people for Luke Skywalker Trump to be talking trash about.
The Tatooine, if this happened on Tatooine, this challenge, I feel like people would do so well with it. The meat would have been overcooked.
Yeah.
It is funny.
Judged by Jawas.
Yeah, you could have there's a lot of possibilities there, right? Like, you could have scavengers coming through. Yeah, there's a lot of options. And Luke was on a moisture farm, right? So, like, there is the option. Like, they clearly need that. And Grayson needed it as well. Her steak needed moisture. So she really could have used Luke Skywalker. But I'm serious. If you rewatch that first episode four, and Luke Skywalker says multiple times, I hate sand people. And I swear to you, if you did Skywalker or Trump and put that on Twitter, people wouldn't know who said that. And I think that, you know, there's a possibility, and no spoilers on the new Star Wars, but is there a possibility Luke Skywalker becomes a candidate for Imperial government on an I hate sand people campaign?
I think that in episode six, remember, the Emperor's like, you know, basically it looks at this divergent path where he can either choose to be the good Jedi or join the dark side. And I feel like there's an alternate timeline where Luke chooses to go on to the dark side, and then that's how he becomes Donald Trump. So we're in the darkest timeline right now.
I just want to make Tatooine a winner again or whatever. Yeah. So there's a possibility there. But yeah, it's interesting because I don't know. There's a lot of Star Wars sand kind of things to be had here, but I really do feel like people that laughed at the stove or really kind of didn't take it seriously, they didn't do so hot with this, not to play a pun. There are people who really embraced the stove, if you will, or the oven, and those people did really well. Wesley, for example, wins the quickfire by using the stove three different ways. He did three different kind of distinct preparations with the stove. He had some coconut kind of milk and some shrimp. He really wants one of the ovens. He's doing a lot of buttering up to Chef Jose Andreas and saying the things that he really likes about the oven, and he really wants one. Ultimately, that seems to help him because he's in the top three with Isaac and Jeremy, and he does win. So good on Chef Wesley. Kurt, I know you're pleased with this turnaround, so this is a good thing.
It would suck if he was based in Seattle and had absolutely no chance of using the solar oven, but luckily he's in the South.
Yeah, he's in Atlanta. It gets fairly solar down there. So there are going to be days where he can really take care of business with that solar oven. And
I've got one in my basement apartment. It doesn't really seem to do a whole lot.
I have other solar related things in my basement, but nobody's listening from the feds, I hope. So that'll be all right.
This is a California based podcast. You're good to go.
Yeah, good to go. I'm not in California, unfortunately. So I wish I were. The bottom three, Phillip, hard to eat for Padma. We already know about that. It's pretty funny. Grayson's needed moisture. And Giselle, look, she blew up her oven midway through the challenge.
Couscous avec glass.
Yes, couscous with glass. I like the crunchiness of the glass. It adds a good texture, but it did cut the hell out of my mouth. So
the blood from the tongue adds a really nice saltiness to it.
Yeah, so it's very unfortunate for Giselle that she didn't follow the rules. But
I mean, luckily they had it. Like, I was wondering, they had a spare oven, which was nice.
Yeah, and that was nice. And there was another little oven sitting around. So Wesley wins for really using the ovens. I'm actually really cool with that. Even if you didn't have the best food, I'm happy that the person who really embraced the challenge the most and kind of got the most out of what they were doing, I'm cool with that. And it sounded like his food was very good. I'm not discounting that. But I'm also pleased that he really kind of embraced the spirit of the quick fire the most. And I feel like he or Isaac, who also did that, really deserved to kind of win based on what we saw on the show.
Agreed.
So they further the kind of ovens and stoves thing here. We divide ourselves into teams, ovens versus stoves, an orange team versus a blue team. And the next elimination challenge is ultimately a four-course meal with a lot of golf puns that you have to serve up, where, you know, it's a kind of progressive meal where you begin with the app and end with the dessert that you have to prep and cook on essentially a golf snack cart at the golf course. And so that's what we're doing for the elimination challenge. And again, some people are cool with this, some people are not. And the people who are cool with it seem to do a pretty good job of getting used to the challenge. There is some drama about the teams. What did you guys think about this? Giselle does not want to be on a team cooking the same dish as Angelina. Kurt, were we robbed of great TV drama by seeing this pairing form? Or did you like the drama we got by seeing them not form?
I think I would have rather seen them work together and just see where that ends up going. I mean, it would have been just as great TV for them to be like, okay, you know, let's turn this around, or for one of them to not want to be on, the other person willing to be. I don't know. But it was interesting. I don't think we've ever really seen the I refuse to work with this person group challenge sort of thing. I mean, but it was. Yeah, these two were not going to get along. And apparently a lot of it stemmed from Angelina's comment about, I can't believe this bitch beat me again. But it was kind of, but I also didn't, I think there's a little bit of context there too. Like she wasn't trying to say it behind her back. It was more like a term of maybe not affection, but of, I didn't think it was meant to be as an insult when she said it after the last challenge. So, but it did surprise me that this happened.
I don't know. I'm fine with it just because, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of, like, I don't need drama on Top Chef. I find the entertainment is more so in, you know, what the individual does and also the stuff that happens, the havoc and trying to create these dishes. And I feel like if Angelina and Giselle worked together, something would tell me it would take up like the brunt of the amount of time. This is a very oddly paced episode as well. Yeah. It felt super quick, specifically like when the elimination challenge and the judging felt really, really quick. And I feel like if we did that, we wouldn't see as many people. So, and we also got, you know, we got Angelina paired with Grayson. So at least, you know, she didn't find a safe haven with somebody. She didn't like, you know, pair up with Chad. Yeah. She found someone else who probably is not as outwardly dramatic in causing scuffles, but is still pretty dramatic in her own right.
Yeah, I think I would have, though, we would have liked to have seen Giselle and Angelina team up and then do something like amazing and kind of like prove themselves. But yeah, they just weren't having it.
Yeah. And I mean, it is fascinating to see how this kind of can manifest is that you see some pairings here of people that weren't necessarily ever paired together before. But then you see some other pairing. Kwame and Chad, for example, have worked together in the Mexican team. So seeing them kind of paired together, not a super surprise. But, you know, Angelina and Giselle don't want to work together. I think both of them, it's like a mutual thing. So that's fine. And of course, Chef Philip doesn't seem to have anybody working with him except for his wife. You know, he's bringing her a Coachella dessert. Did you guys know that they cook for VIPs at Coachella? Did you guys know that happened?
I did.
What VIPs are at Coachella?
Yeah, I wonder what defines what makes a Coachella VIP.
Yeah, probably people like Aaron Paul and like young kind of actors and, you know, Taylor Swift, people who are like attending the concert, not as a performer, people like that. So this is the thing. I strongly believe that Chef Philip has an audience who really likes what he does and buys into his kind of stuff and, you know, has no issue with the picture on the outside of the restaurant, California vibe. We saw Chef Emeril kind of remark about this in the first episode, like that guy right there, that's California, like that's the new California cuisine. So he may be very popular in that segment. And that, of course, for the rest of the country is easy to mock and laugh at from afar. But I do think he at least means well in terms of what he's trying to represent there.
Agreed.
Yeah. But it's interesting because it is there's definitely a vibe going on with the cast, and especially the male members of the cast seem to be bonding. Marjorie's in there mixing it up with them as well. But we don't really see, you know, the whole cast, Angelina, Giselle, Grayson, people like that doing it. And Jason is very uncomfortable at the La Quinta Inn as well. I know it's a La Quinta resort, but I refuse to call it that. He sees everybody kind of cackling and jumping in and out of hot tubs and pools, and he feels a little left out. And I don't know. What did you guys think this segment was in there for? Like, are we going to get like a growth narrative for Jason, or is he going to be an outsider all season, or what do you think's going on here? Mike, Jason's on your team, right?
Yeah, and I was, I don't want to spoil too much about the next time on, specifically because the next time on is more so like 2 weeks on, and a new calendar year on, but I don't know. I have a hunch that this is going to lead to him butting heads with other people, specifically with these bros.
Yeah.
It could turn into a growth narrative, but for me, he says he's usually a very gregarious person, and he just feels like he's out of his element here, not in a Grayson type of way. But that to me means that I think he's usually very outspoken, and he's going to start being very outspoken, yeah, and he's going to start really arguing with people that he doesn't like.
Yeah, he's outgoing, but he's not like reality TV outgoing.
Yeah, and that's, I think, interesting. Like, he may have actually been cast because of his quality as a chef and not because of his quality as a character. Mike, do you feel like as a member of your team, which also includes Chef Amar, Chef Kwame, and Chef Philip, do you feel like there's a little concern here that Jason, that this conflict that you think might emerge might impact his chances of winning the game?
Yeah, I'm afraid Jason might secede from my team now after, you know, looking at the people that I have.
Are you team bro?
I guess I have to side with the majority here, right? And I mean, Jason's great, but Kwame and Amar have shown results. Jason, you haven't brought me anything yet, buddy. You gotta, you know, bring me something at my doorstep, and maybe I'll be able to take you in and have a meal. It'll be interesting because, I mean, Top Chef is also not usually based in like the "I'm going to go after these people" type of mentality, like you see on a show like Survivor or Big Brother or even Amazing Race. So I wouldn't expect Jason to do that, but I definitely, again, alluding to the preview that we're going to see for the next episode, I feel like he may try to do that from time to time, where he'll, if a bro does something that he doesn't like, I feel like he's going to start speaking his mind about it.
Yeah, and if we could Kitchen Wars, where, like, you know, they're starting their own restaurant, he's on a group with three other people, if he gets put with like Chad, Jeremy, and Amar, that's not going to, you know, he's going to definitely feel out of place. I mean, the little sausage stew they were cooking in that hot tub with the seven bros in there, and Jason.
All right, that's what I'm changing my team's name to. Sausage stew. All of our teams have to be food names. Now we have Team Egg and Team Sausage Stew.
I think it was meant to build. I mean, compassion's not the word I'm looking for, but I think it was a supportive story for Jason that they were telling tonight. Like, we were meant to empathize with him or sympathize with him to some extent. So I think if anything, the fact that we got that little aside, it may be setting up something that for down the road, but I think we're also meant to they're trying to prepare us to take Jason's side on this and see where he's coming from.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. I think it's fascinating to look at that little scene because we've talked about how Top Chef does a really pretty good job of editing character moments for these chefs and giving them kind of character moments, not just in the episode they're going to get eliminated in or right before that episode, but throughout the season. We find out as much as we can about these chefs, and they do a good job of featuring people to the extent that they can, so that you know what each of these people kind of is about and what they're doing. And there are only a couple that are getting kind of a background edit on this season. Most of them are pretty forward. And I actually think that one of the stories they are telling with Jason is about his ability to work with other people. Last week, he got paired with Francis, and they were going to, for their surf and turf, do pork and black cod. And Jason kind of took the back seat and let her sort of menu plan, and ended up as a result with a lot of ingredients that he didn't really cook with. And he, as we saw him do in that challenge, was freaking out a little bit. He was changing things late in his dish. He wasn't confident with the flavor profiles that he did have going forward. And that was ultimately because he had sort of ceded control of the team when it was a team challenge to Francis. And he ended up with a lot of ingredients that he didn't really use. So I don't know if this is a narrative that's kind of developing about Jason, that he's having some issues fitting in, that When he's on his own, he's okay. But when he's on a team, it can become a little more different. It doesn't really come to bear in the second course of this elimination challenge at all. He and Marjorie seem to work really well together and put out good food. So I don't know where we're going with this story ultimately, but it is a story. It is present. It is there. And it's harder, I think, in this season when we don't have a clear home base for these chefs. We can always return to like their house or whatever, and we can see a lot of life at the house. But we don't, you know, we don't see that happening on this season because they're constantly traveling. So there isn't a great home base for them to shoot at. So in some ways, too, they may be just telling any stories they can whenever they can with what's happening. So, yeah. But anyway, the ovens versus stove teams are formed. They get a little time to shop. I will say, Mike, you said earlier that the episode was faster paced. I think that part of that is because each of these teams only has an hour to prep and cook on the golf course. So there isn't a ton of it. There's not like a 3 hour cook going where a lot of things and drama can emerge. It's a very quick cook where, you know, things happen and then they're cooking, they're ready to go. And for some people, yeah, we see that really do well. And for others, we don't. What did you guys think of, for example, we jump right in. The first two teams are both doing ceviches. Chad and Kwame are doing one with a sweet potato kind of element to it. And then Jeremy and Karen, their real trick with halibut is to use a double bowl to make it super nice and refreshing and cold. Did you guys think this was as big of a deal as it ultimately ended up being when you first saw it?
The use of the double bowl?
Yeah.
You know, we've seen little things like that before really put teams over the top, like kind of those things of, I mean, I go back to Garrett and the, you know, trying out the beet peels and that was like a nice little touch. I mean, apparently, you know, having been out there once, it is hot, and I can see if it's a fish and it's like a chilled, like a surprisingly chilled dish versus something that's a little bit by comparison, especially side by side, kind of the same ish thing that's a little bit on the warmer side. I can see that being kind of the main point of differentiation and therefore becoming a big deal.
Yeah. And I think that this is also bringing up an interesting theme as well that I think we're seeing this season, which is people bringing in their previous experience to help them in these challenges. Yeah. I mean, we saw in episode 2, Kwame does pop-up restaurants all the time. And so he was, even though the Mexican team did pretty poorly, he was still able to kind of limp them along into not finishing in last. And I feel like we see this episode, the reason why Jeremy does this double bowl technique is because he's used it before because he's done ceviche in Miami. Yeah. So it's interesting to kind of track along how people are really utilizing their previous experience to help them expand beyond their boundaries, which is something that somebody like Grayson has not been able to do.
Yeah, I think the Miami part is really a kind of a key element to this, Mike, that you're right in exposing that. Having lived myself in Miami for a year, it does get super hot and super humid and very sunny at times in Miami, obviously. And I think Jeremy having served ceviche in Miami before and using this double bowl trick, it really does put it over the top. I mean, John Besh loved the meal. He said it was outstanding flavors. He could have used a little more spice, he said, but overall, he was very pleased. So it wasn't just that it was cold. They also really liked the taste of this thing. Right. And so that is it. It isn't just that they served it over a silly kind of double plastic bowl with a little ice in the lower bowl. It was also a really good ceviche. So that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, have you guys ever had ceviche, by the way?
No. Yeah, once in Mexico and I got sick.
Was it Chad's restaurant?
No, it was not. It was not.
Ceviche is always a big roll of the dice because of course, I mean, it's like it is an uncooked fish food, similar to sushi in some respects in that it's raw fish. But the citrus kind of element is supposed to break down the protein in the fish such that it tastes and feels like it has been prepared. And that's kind of the element of ceviche. So that's why you're ultimately going to see a ceviche in quick fires a lot of the time, especially ones with like a 15-minute time limit, because what it requires you to do is cut really thin slices of fish and then essentially break the proteins down with some citrus element. And so that is really all there is to a ceviche. And there's just like anything that we've seen, if you're fans of Top Chef, of course you see, just because something is simple doesn't mean it can't be screwed up. And so one of the key elements of ceviche is it has to be very cold. Like it has to be served in a way that is appealing. Warm ceviche, no bueno. That is probably what you had in Mexico, Kurt. And that is not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to, where I lived in Miami, you could get ceviche delivered to the door, which I'm sure is, can also happen in New York and LA. But in Cincinnati, where I live now, I don't even know where I can get ceviche, period. So it was kind of fascinating to live in a world where somebody could ride on a bike and get super sweaty and bring you ceviche. Not exactly the most appealing way to get ceviche.
I hear Skyline is developing a ceviche bowl.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah, just it's called a ceviche three-way. Yeah. And yeah, served over noodles. It's fantastic. So
yeah
not the best thing in the world, right? But speaking of the not the best thing in the world, it's difficult for the orange team in the second course. Grayson and Angelina together. We saw Angelina sort of be rejected, as we talked about. Now this time, she wants to kind of work with Grayson. They're going to cook this shrimp with a chorizo and corn hash and some avocado. And then the first set of judges, and we should talk about the way this elimination challenge kind of plays out. So they're playing through in groups of four and foursomes of golf. And the first set of judges always comes through, and then you know, are going to serve the second set of judges. And a lot of times it seems like these chefs maybe are alternating their recipe based on comments from the first set of chefs. And so when the first set of chefs comes through with Grayson, Jose Andreas makes a comment about the cook on the corn, and how, you know, if it's fresh corn and it's not cooked, it's probably going to be better, and that the cooked part of the corn is probably not great. And Grayson takes that feedback, and instead of putting some raw corn into the mix or changing the corn in the hash, she doubles down and just continues to serve the corn hash that she's preparing. Yeah. Unfortunately, the second time around, she serves it to Tom Colicchio, and at that point, it's really hammered. The skin is tough. It's like dried out. If you've overcooked corn before, you know what this is like. And she didn't take the feedback. Not only didn't she take it, she even says, "I made the executive decision to leave the corn cooked as it is."
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's interesting because she says that in the course of the challenge. Mm-hmm. And we'll couch that against what she complains about later on. But she makes the executive decision here.
Yeah. It's even more, I think, disappointing is that she vocalizes, you know what, we could put in the fresh corn now. We could do this. And then she decides, let's not. And I don't know if that meant if the next serving was already not plated but prepared, then do you take out the I don't know how far along the dish was. Do you have to somehow take out the old corn? I mean, it doesn't seem like it's adding the fresh corn to the already cooked corn would improve the dish. You'd almost have to go through and take out the old corn. And I don't know if the dish was at a state where that would have been difficult. And I just don't know how far along the next team was. Maybe. So I'm just wondering if there were other factors in that decision. But yeah, it was very disappointing that that was something that she decided not to do after noting that it probably was a good idea.
I mean, are we shocked that Grayson got advice as to what to do in this competition and didn't take it? Because I'm not shocked whatsoever, considering this has been her arc for the past 3 weeks. It's sad to see, as we talked about before, to see a returning player do this. It is interesting that, and we'll talk about this later on, about whether she did quote unquote fall on her sword for Angelina, but when they're playing their dishes, the orange team decides to go with this Latin theme, and Angelina actually surprisingly steps up and says, you know, I'll help plan this dish, since Grayson does, surprise surprise, not in her comfort zone when it comes to Latin food. And it's interesting here how Grayson decides in the moment to make the executive decision. So it seems like Angelina wore the pants in the relationship in terms of planning, but Grayson wore the pants in terms of execution.
Yeah, and I think that leads to her execution ultimately, and I think that's fair.
Yeah, and this is going back to, I think, last episode where we saw Jason and Francis kind of struggling with their dishes, and Jason was kind of critiqued for, not pushing back or kind of giving in to going along with Thai flavors, a flavor profile he wasn't comfortable with. Again, here's another thing where you have people in pairs, and Grayson vocalizes Latin, not my thing, but hopefully Angelina will be able to carry me through this.
Right. Oh boy, that's a weak horse to rely on. Yeah.
So,
and ultimately, nobody complained about the flavor of their dish didn't really get dinged. I mean, it wasn't that. It was strictly a preparation thing, and flavors are not, comfort level or not, Grayson should know. That corn didn't taste as good as it needed to, and I needed to get rid of it. And there's a lot of discussion of that later, which we'll get into.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think the errors of this dish were in execution and not in preparation or planning. And ultimately, the execution of the dish came down to, it sounded like Grayson's calls. So I think the right person went home. In terms of their counterpart in the second course, Jason and Marjorie cooked a grilled shrimp and a salad. The judges really liked it. Richard Blaze said the celery and the tomato combo is a winner. My thinking on that was, if celery and tomato is a winning combo, why don't we see more of that?
Yeah, like, there's not enough tomatoes on crudité platters.
Yeah, yeah, like this is something that you could easily see in every kind of home, celery and tomatoes. So,
also, wait, can we talk about how much Richard Blaze looked like such a goober in his little pink polo, by the way?
You can if you want, Mike. What do you think?
He looks like such a little goober. And maybe it's because, you know, the pink with the sun reflecting up against it, it makes his face look more pink. But I don't know. He looked like, granted, I don't think any of these judges are great at golf. And so to watch them like do these horrible swings in the B-roll between while everyone getting set up is pretty funny. But I don't know. He just seems like the type of guy that'd be like, yeah, I know my way around a golf course, and then just completely whip every shot, but still pretend like he's going to, you know, he's the master of the club.
Yeah, I'm with that. The glasses don't help. I think they're cool in the moment. Maybe they're not as great when they're not all purpose glasses. I think we got to be careful with a white clear rimmed glass like that. I think doesn't always work with every outfit, and it does tend to kind of make you look a certain way when you're wearing it in the wrong circumstance. I bet Philip really liked them though.
Yeah. I'm wondering from a time travel perspective, like, are these people separated at birth? Philip and Richard Blaze, is one of them future or past the other person? But the way that we talk about Richard sometimes, it mirrors how at times we also talked about at least Philip in the past. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of connection there. Through time and space.
If Philip is listening, you just made him really happy and excited. Like, that's a huge compliment to pay.
Philip, if you're listening using the headphones that you made out of two coconut shells and a rubber band
that you foraged for, your Beats by Phil, we understand.
That was Beats by Garrett.
Beats by Garrett. That was last week, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, Philip is, we'll get to Philip in a minute because he's dessert course. Philip and Isaac are solo on the desserts. The other teams for the third course are Wesley and Carl are on the blue team, and Chef Amar and Chef Giselle on the orange team. Wesley and Carl, they make a roasted pork loin. Chef Jose Andreas says, you know, you should chill these grapes instead of serving them warm. And they do chill the grapes for the second iteration.
Wow, people taking judges' advice.
Yeah, and look what happens. Like, Blaze says this is a restaurant quality dish. And I think that was a nice little nod to saving his old restaurant, the Spence, some face by indicating that Wesley could prepare restaurant quality food after all. Taking notes. It turns out it works, guys. One other really interesting thing about the blue team that I have a question for both of you guys on. Carl admits some juvenile offenses here. I think the statute of limitations is run, but he admits he snuck on some golf courses, flipped some golf carts over, and, you know, he's an adult now, so it's fine. Since you're both adults, do you have any juvenile offenses you'd like to own up to? Mike, we'll start with you.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know if this counts, but I've definitely snuck into movies before. I've definitely trespassed into territories before.
Territories?
Like the Yukon territory?
I trespassed into the Yukon territory.
None of it?
And I guess, you know, I might have trespassed to imbibe in things that, in techniques that Philip may have used before in previous dishes, and I will leave it at that.
Yes, I got it. So you,
And that also includes sneaking on a golf course as well.
You snuck on a golf course in the Yukon territory and blew some snot on a rock. I got it.
Yep.
Kurt, would you like to own up to anything? This is a safe space. No one's listening.
No one listens to this podcast. I've snuck people into drive-ins in the trunk of a car before.
By drive-in, do you mean across the Mexican border?
No, like in West Michigan, there's still, like, you know, functioning drive-in movie theaters, like four screens, and I believe it was you still had to pay by the individual, and I believe that we snuck people in the trunk of a car. It's like I grew up in like the 50s. But
do you remember what movie you were seeing that you snuck people into?
I do not. Everything was a double feature on each of the four screens. And I'm trying to, I can't remember for the life of me, unfortunately. I was probably just too panicked about, they're going to find us. They're going to find us.
Yeah. You mentioned last week that your method of dealing with kind of adversity was similar to Chef Giselle's. So I'd love to see young Kurt Clark in this. Well, I say young. This could have been last year for all I know. In this drive-in smuggling incident, just kind of white knuckling the steering wheel and not looking the driving people in the eye. No one's in the trunk, officer.
How many? And then I just like floor the gas, go through the gate, and like plunge into the side of the projection house in the center of it. So it's like,
well, it looks like we're not seeing Transformers today. What about you, Antonio? Now I'm intrigued. Yeah.
Oh, no, you don't want this to turn into like a Chunk from Goonies scenario where I just start crying and telling you every bad thing I've done since fourth grade.
And then at my sister's bat mitzvah.
I was telling people the other day, I was talking to my brother, who I don't know why this came up, but we were somewhere in a really, really, really long line. And I just said, like a retail outlet. And I was like, you could just walk out with it, like, and send them some money or whatever, like, you know, figure out a way to make it right, but just leave, you know? And he was like, I've never shoplifted. And I'm like, how have you gone through your life and never shoplifted? And then I rattled off a list of, like, I don't know, probably 15 to 20 things in my life that I'd shoplifted. And then he started looking at me at about item 6 or 7, like, who is this person? Like, and I realized that I'd crossed a line. Like, I don't know, when you're 11 or 12, I thought it's like commonplace to like swipe a pack of bubble gum or a candy bar or something. But I guess according to my brother Mario, not that commonplace in his world. So that's,
well, you know, Mario is a hero's name. He does not he condones any sort of villainous actions.
Yes, and Antonio is a bastard's name, and so I just took bastardly actions throughout. I stole like stupid stuff, like when I was like 9 years old, I stole like a really nice rock from a museum gift shop because my aunt wouldn't buy it for me and I wanted it. So, you know, there is a little bit of a rebel in me in that regard. And of course, as far as other things go, that is far from my least grievous offense or most grievous offense. So we won't get into that. And this is not the podcast for that. We'll save that for later. But yeah, I've definitely done some. I mean, even like I was at a friend's wedding in like Franklin, Tennessee area a few years ago. And we were in this like McMansion kind of monument to subprime mortgages, like subdivision that had a golf cart and a swimming pool right there. And after the reception, I got in the golf cart and the key was in it, started it up, and I drove it to the other end of the place and parked it and left it. So I just did that because I wanted to. I don't know. It just felt funny to do it. So I have done things with golf carts as well. It can be trouble. I have another friend who did something similar to Carl, got caught, and he considers it to be the worst thing he's ever done in his life. So
what?
Yeah, I don't know. The two
weeks. Was this your brother?
No, this is my friend Chris. Your mileage may vary on the levels of criminal. If you have any criminal activity you want to admit to in the comments of this podcast, please feel free to unburden yourself behind your internet screen name and let us know some horrible things you've done. We won't report you unless it reaches felony level. So feel free to unburden yourself. But yeah, Carl, just a juvenile offender. No big deal. We didn't get any level of juvenile offenses with Chef Amar and Giselle. They cooked some strip steak and potato salad. Chef Andreas said the dish didn't really come together. Blaze said it tastes better than it looked. But overall, everybody says nice work.
And that the salsa verde had all the flavor, not so much the marinade. So to me, that was like a little feather in Giselle's cap. Or I don't know if that was like the flavors of the salsa verde overpowered the marinade. But I did come out of this strangely feeling safe with Giselle.
You're grasping at straws.
So yeah, do you think, though, so had Grayson and Angelina not biffed it and the orange team still lost, which team do you think would be on the bottom, this team or Kwame and Chad?
I got an overwhelming sense throughout that the blue team was just kind of ahead on everything for the most part.
So if the orange team still lost, though, and Grayson and Angelina did a fine enough job to not be the worst dish. Well, I guess I'm asking, which is the second worst dish outside of, you know, Grayson and Angelina?
I think the second worst dish was Phillips. We haven't really talked about it yet, but I got the impression that his was the worst. I actually think that the editing kind of made it seem like that was the case, where the judges said like the blue team had some really good meals and then at least one that wasn't as good. And when they said that, they sort of cut to Phillip. So I think that Phillips was probably the worst. There were some serious texture issues in play, even though people did like the flavor generally. People did have issues with the texture of the dish. And so I got the impression that whole experience with Chef Phillip was probably the worst. Is that what your read was, Kurt?
I think so. And I think, like, and Mike, I think if you're wondering, like, you know, who from the, you know, Orange team other than Grace and Angelina was in danger.
I misread that.
I agree completely. Phillips, if the blue team had somehow lost, Phillip definitely would have been gone, which would have, you know, taken, that would have been, you know, unfortunate from an entertainment perspective. I do think though that then if, you know, second to them was probably Amar and Giselle, and we might have seen Chef Amar in trouble. Like if the, you know, he said that he had cooked, because they asked specifically who cooked what, and he said that he cooked he prepared the meat and the potato salad, and the main complaint, it seemed here, was that the meat and potato salad didn't seem like they were a cohesive unit, almost like two separate dishes. And the salsa verde that Amar kind of put Giselle on, because it was simple, had like probably the best flavor profile. So we might have seen Chef Amar in trouble if for some reason Grayson and Angelina were in trouble. I was just surprised at this point that we did not see a single carrot in this episode.
And that was surprising. I mean, do you think desert carrots are very popular? Golf course carrots?
I don't know. It's just seemed that we've had an abundance of carrots in the first three episodes. I'm surprised they didn't like truck them out, like they were trying to get rid of them as if there was like an excess of carrots. But it seems like carrots are popping up in all sorts of places except in Palm Desert. Something we also didn't talk about, the fact that Wesley did have immunity. We did see some commentary from Carl about being a little bit worried that, you know, if something did go wrong with their dish, that it would potentially fall on him. Because I did like when the judges were, the first round of judges were tasting their dish, they said, you know, the grapes really should be cold here. Who made the decision? And Carl was like, oh, that was Wes.
Yeah, throw him right under the bus. No problem.
And, you know, as the person has immunity, it wasn't a huge critique and maybe be fine with that. And like I said, Wes was like, well, we'll definitely chill them for the next guest. But I was a little surprised that the teams didn't decide, well, if the dessert has to be kind of a solo item, maybe Wesley, you should do the dessert. Maybe that was just maybe not in his comfort area, or they decided
something tells me Phillip said, don't worry guys, I have a dessert that's going to knock him out of the park. Right. Or as opposed to Isaac, who's like, yeah, I guess I'll do dessert. Nobody else really has an idea of dessert.
Also surprised Marjorie didn't do the dessert, given that that was her winning dish. And she's like, seems to be very comfortable with desserts, that she had partnered up with Jason for the second course. So a little bit surprised. There's what the decision behind there was. Again, that might have been Phillip saying, no, I'll do it. But would have thought that Marjorie would have been my number one contender for doing the solo dessert, this option.
It is a safer call to not be solo. I think it is a brave decision to put yourself out there, because if there is a problem with the dish, there you can't hide behind anybody, and you can't really pawn it off on anybody, and you can't make it difficult on the judges. It's all you. So maybe that's a smart gameplay choice by Marjorie, even though I agree, she's really looked like the kind of dominant pastry chef and dessert chef that's going into play there. Maybe it just wasn't what she ultimately felt comfortable in that setting, cooking dessert. Like maybe her desserts are not that kind of dessert. Mm-hmm. Maybe she needs an oven, or she needs time for things to kind of play out differently. I'm not saying that she couldn't make a dessert that would really pop there. It just may not be one of her wheelhouse desserts. Whereas a sabayon is a dessert I think Isaac has probably made before. He made a kubayon and a sabayon. He's like really just kind of focusing on these kinds of flavors and these kinds of
he's bayon strong.
He's bayon strong, so he's ready to rock. He doesn't have the problems that Phillip has. Phillip is having issues with the wind. Isaac is having some, but not like Phillip. Phillip's poles blow away. He can't keep his fire going. I mean, this is a comedy segment. You guys are laughing in the background.
Yeah, between we saw, you know, great at one point, you know, later on, we see, you know, Grayson having trouble with coconuts. We see fires not being lit. I didn't know if this was Survivor or Top Chef, I did like Isaac's little kind of strategery at the while shopping, where he sees that Phillip's kind of going with limes that he thinks are a bit tough, and so he's going to go for the grapefruit, which he thinks is going to be a bit more appropriate, and actually that ends up paying off for him.
Yeah, I also really like just Isaac's running commentary about Phillip. When he sees Phillip kind of struggling with the plating and hiding under the tablecloth as the judges approach, Isaac says, oh, he's making this easy, you know, and like kind of laughing at him as he's observing him, throwing him under the bus for his non-seasonal produce to the second set of judges.
Yeah.
I really laughed at Chef Jose Andreas, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Picking up the tablecloth and peeking in there, looking at Phillip. John Besh also thought this was hilarious, by the way. He was cackling.
as did I, and Patton was pounding on the table because, I mean, this is ridiculous. Philip is putting on a puppet show with no puppets. Yeah. with his head, because, you know, on Top Chef, you usually give like an introduction to your dish, and that's when they pan to the dish and everything. Philip decides to do his as he's preparing the dish to pass the time, but his head is stuck underneath the tablecloth. So you just hear this voice, and his head's bobbing up and down, and I could not stop laughing at this because it is utterly, I know it's like, it was obviously a preventative measure, but the way it was executed is completely inane.
Yeah, this is just so funny. I'm now wondering if they cast Philip on the show knowing that Philip, like knowing that he would be in his own world and do things like grab rocks out of the desert, or, you know, just he described one of his ingredients in the dessert as air. He was like, the air is flavored with whatever.
Lime air. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, he's not even foaming it. He's literally serving air. Like, this guy is nuts. So I laughed a lot at that.
They probably, you know, took a look at his vast filmography, which has mostly taken place on the Cooking Channel and the Food Network, in terms of being on what he's done on Cutthroat Kitchen, or was it Guy's Grocery Games, and so they I think they, having seen him before on TV, they kind of knew what they were going to get with this guy.
Yeah, and they're getting it, and I'm loving it. John Besh is loving it. I'm loving it. Padma says it's the craziest thing she's ever seen, which I think means Padma needs to get out more. But and that's crazy to say for someone whose whole life is getting out, but she needs to get out more if that's the craziest thing she's ever seen. So I really laughed hard at the way the judges were reacting to this, and Isaac as well. Isaac, he said he must have been high to pick dessert, but he's happy with his dish, the grapefruit. A lot of the judges want more grapefruit and more, you know, and more tequila. So I think that's pretty good. So that goes really well. It's interesting because you guys, we had the debate that I kind of miscalibrated on here about which orange team would have gone home if it wasn't for Grayson and Angelina. Chef Kwame thought it would be him. Like, he's thinking like, oh, it's us. Like, and I think that's interesting because he says all the other judges seem to be happy with their food, and we know we had some problems. True. So, you know, he thinks he's going.
That's true. I forget, especially I think the contrast, like with the other team doing ceviche, was probably maybe would have been a little bit more stark in the judges' minds too, in terms of here's this dish we loved, and then here's like the lesser version of it. So you're right, they Kwame and Shad may have actually been in some trouble there
I don't know. Maybe because I'm a Kwame supporter, but I mean, Jose Andreas did say like the orange team, their ceviche started off well, and then it just like all the other dishes sort of petered out from there. So I think I agree that like by comparison, it was the worst dish. But I mean, aside from the complaint that like they couldn't find the sweet potato, I think they still enjoyed the ceviche overall.
Yeah, it definitely didn't resonate as bad. I personally think that the second group didn't really love the flavors, and the first group really said it's good, but it's a little bit warm. And Kwame said, you know, I put the fish on ice. I don't know what else I could do. Turns out there is one more thing you could have done.
You put the ice on the fish.
Yeah. So at any rate, the second group really did have a little issue with the flavors. And I think some of this is more Kwame is a realist. And so when the groups are getting together to compare notes, he recognizes that, you know, there was some negative feedback about his dish. And Grayson has her heels so dug in and head in the sand that she doesn't realize that she's, you know, she's probably not sharing with her team that there's a possibility that the judges like their dish the least. And she's not even seeing that. And even when they get down to the final three, she's like, I thought our dish was good. I don't understand what the problem was. So we'll talk about that in just a second. The blue team does win. The Hollywood ceviche stands out. The dish that ultimately kind of Karen and Jeremy are responsible for. Jeremy does take the win. I don't know if it's because of his ice prep. John Besh says he went above and beyond with the halibut. He wins a week stay at the La Quinta Inn and anywhere. Skokie, Illinois, maybe is his choice. Yeah. So, you know, like that'll be good for Chef Jeremy. But yeah, it sounded like the ice presentation was a big deal there, and that's crazy. Good for them. Good for them.
Yeah.
The orange team does lose, but still gets the comment that they're not really bad overall. That everyone put out solid dishes. It's just that Grayson and Angelina was the one that stood out to the judges as the most inferior. Richard Blaise kind of plays a weird game here where he says to Chef Angelina, I'm going to ask you a tough question. Who do you think should go home? You got to guys feel about this line of questioning. Is this ever going to produce like good television? Did you like what happened here?
I mean, remember that he's also the one, I think, last episode that was like, oh, did you, knowing what the other person made, did you try to sabotage them? Like, it's clear that I think he's still trying to get his balance, get his bearings in terms of like where he falls in the judging panel. And maybe he wants to be like the person that instigates inter-team drama since he feels like that's good TV. But yeah, it doesn't work and it comes off as very cheesy.
Well, it's like I don't know if he's trying to be Trump. I mean, they obviously they do this on Celebrity Apprentice. They occasionally do this on Project Runway as well. But it's always in situations where you have like a team of four people or five people or more who each have like a distinct role. And in those cases, it can be actually useful information that can help you make a decision when it's kind of a subjective opinion when you're not sure who did what. But in a two-person team to ask who you think should go home, like unless you have somebody who is, you know, it's a strange question to ask. And the answer always should be not me, unless it was like, unless there's some sort of integrity question at play about who did what. It shouldn't even be asked.
Yeah, and we've seen it kind of play out. We've seen team members throw other team members under the bus. Sort of famously, Chef Josie throws Kristen Kish under the bus in the Restaurant Wars Challenge and says,
yep.
Well, if your plates didn't have enough sauce on them, then you didn't have enough sauce. And that she sauced the plate. So, you know, and that does happen. It has happened. And we have seen that play out. I thought Angelina gave actually a pretty, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, is poised answer. She says, like, you know, we were both responsible for the menu planning. We were both responsible for the preparation of the dish. We both are chefs who have that on the line. And then somebody was like, do you think you both should go home? And she said, well, I don't want to go home.
Right.
That's it. You know, so you can, that's your answer.
So we, because of the botched sudden death quickfire last week, I feel like we have to have some sort of double elimination at some point this season. Do you think they should have both just gone home? I do think it's weird that you have a two-person dish and you choose only one person to send home out of them, because you're really splitting hairs in terms of like figuring out what was the worst component. And that happens here where, you know, Grayson goes home because she had the corn, even though she says they sat on the corn, but she cooked the corn. And I actually, and granted, probably it's probably because they both aren't on my team, but I would have been fine with eliminating them both at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had a problem with that.
I was at one point thinking that was potentially was going to happen, and my mind was even going ahead to a three-person, you know, last chance kitchen, which would not at all be unusual. But yeah, this was, I think you could have safely sent both of them. You'll have them fight it out together in Last Chance Kitchen.
Yeah, or, you know, there could have been, in another episode, you could foresee a circumstance where they have to cook one final dish right then and there, and the loser goes home. I mean, that's kind of a sudden death elimination, where it is sudden death, truly, in that one of the people is going home. And well, we've seen that in Top Chef in the past as well. You get one more chance to cook, you know, one bite. We want an amuse-bouche or whatever. And that could have also happened. This is an instance where Tom calls the shots. I think by this point in Top Chef season 13, it's very clear Tom makes the ultimate call. And Tom says, you know, I'm going to decide this based on which ingredient I think made the dish worse, the corn or the shrimp. He ultimately decides it's the corn. Grayson does not take it very well at all. She doesn't want to hear it from Chef Tom. Tom says, you need to hear this, you know, and Grayson's like, it was the corn. And she's like, we both selected the corn. We both prepped the corn. And Tom's like, yeah, but you cook the corn. It's on you. And then she gives it a big big middle finger on the way out. No, she just says F that.
She does the peace sign. And then she says F this S.
And Tom gets a big laugh out of that. And then Grayson, you know, in the middle of this is doing her kind of sit down, where she's making some comments that I think make her look pretty bad. She says, you know, I'm willing to take the fall because I'm older and more experienced. I don't know. Well, how'd you guys feel about Grayson's kind of exit here? Not a very graceful exit.
Now, she's honestly, as much as I've said in the past that I've like enjoyed her spunk, she's got a completely terrible and probably strategically incorrect attitude at Judge's Table. I mean, it is ultimately, in many ways, a subjective choice by the judges. You want the judges to want to keep you there. And her attitude is not helping her at all. She just hasn't done herself any favors this entire season.
And she's doing weird because she's orienting different points of view, like as she's talking as well. I mean, we already talked about this, but you know, she said back during the judging itself, "Oh yeah, I made the executive decision to leave the corn cooked at the judge's table." Well, we both decided on the corn. And Tom makes the great point that you cooked it, and it's the cooking that ultimately matters. And even in her sit down, as you just talked about, she starts off by saying like, "Well, I'll take the fall." For Angelina, because this is her first time out. But then she pivots and says, but the judges should have kept me in because I'm older and I have more experience. So I feel like even in her train of thought, she's contradicting herself.
Agreed.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it's you don't know when these the talking heads parts are filmed. If that was filmed right after she was eliminated, if it was filmed months later, days later, weeks later, I think there are reshoots of these things. Sometimes they're filmed, you know, mostly contemporaneously. A lot of the times they're not. So we don't know when we get Grayson kind of in her talking head, giving that kind of judges kind of thing. I'd like to think that was filmed very soon after she got eliminated and it was still really raw and fresh. And what you're seeing there is not the product of Grayson kind of. Are you laughing at raw and fresh, Kurt?
A little bit.
But yeah,
playing to that Bravo demographic.
What you're seeing there is not ultimately the product of a clear head, and she's still very caught up in what happened. And so I can respect that. She, you know, her the reason that she didn't want to go home and the passion for wanting to stay in the contest, and the person who says F that S on the way out the door, I don't think we saw that in her food throughout the season. I don't think we saw that drive and that passion and that will and the desire to be there. I think we saw a lot of easy choices and a lot of kind of just rejection of challenges and just kind of being pissy the whole time. And I don't think that ultimately is going to get you anywhere, as you observe, Kurt, especially not at judges' table. And so, yeah, it's rough for Grayson. I don't know. This is not a good second chance. This is tough because, you know, she probably invested a fair amount of emotional capital in this choice. I feel really bad for her because this is not an easy way to go out. I think when you come back for a second chance, she will get, of course, a shot at Last Chance Kitchen, which we'll talk about. But still and still all, I think that it's not an easy kind of second chance here for Grayson. And I hope she's satisfied with the experience, because I'd hate to think that the second chance really did disappoint her and that she really regrets it and didn't get anything out of it. I hope that she feels good about the choice she made. I mean, we still don't even really know why she was on this show again. This is not a second chance season. We didn't have other returning people. So did she just apply again? We've talked about this a lot on this podcast. So I don't know. It's really weird kind of ending to see a character, you know, return and be gone in four episodes by herself. But I don't know. Maybe the story is not done yet with Chef Grayson, because she does get to go to Last Chance Kitchen against my favorite, Garrett. This is my Garrett time. I like getting my little Garrett time every week. 10 minutes of Garrett.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yes, unfortunately, that is over. He comes out on like a house of fire when he walks out. He says, Grayson has a big mouth, so the trash talk's coming. How well does he even know her? And he's saying this. Yeah. I love Garrett.
Yeah. It's weird. And it's weird because she's also like, she's very complimentary of him too. She's like, well, Garrett's a great chef. I don't think he deserves to go out first. And I think everyone's a little thrown back to be like, oh wow, she is surprisingly not talking negatively about anyone or anything right now.
I think she's calmed down. I mean, she realizes where she's at now, and this is, I think you know, if you were to, she may be a little bit regretful, I don't know, of the things that she had said. I don't think Tom's still over it. He's like, welcome back to Last Chance Kitchen to Grayson, which I thought was a nice little dig.
Classic Tom dig. That was really
like,
oh yeah, we've seen you here before. Woof. Yeah. Nice work, Tom. But you're right. You're right, Kurt. And like I said, I think the passion that made her so upset and frustrated when she gets eliminated, I that comes from a good place, of a person who really wanted to be there and loves the show. What I'd hate to think is that passion would rest and vest negatively and would kind of fester. And my heart goes out to her in that situation. And it's good to see her on Last Chance Kitchen, kind of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and ready to kind of take on the world here. And even though she does it in her Grayson way, where she's kind of groaning and moaning about the ingredients that she might get in these mystery boxes, she really does kind of embrace the spirit of the challenge in a way that she didn't on and on what we saw on the show this season. So I was glad to see that at least nominally or in the Last Chance Kitchen realm, that the negativity didn't carry over. And even though she didn't get ingredients that she wanted, she says, I definitely don't want coconuts. They have to pick ingredients from mystery boxes. She ends up with coconuts and she ends up with ginkgo nuts, which is something that she just keeps saying over and over, ginkgo nuts. So that's funny. Garrett gets his, what is it? What does he call them? Board beans.
Then it turns into, and turns into broad beans. A little bit of dyslexia there on Garrett's part, which is good because I think he would have totally humiliated himself in front of Tom if he presented the dish with board beans.
I got some crisp board beans. I don't know. I don't know. Garrett seems like, I thought during this Last Chance Kitchen that Garrett was just dominating this thing. And I was a sucker to the editing and to me wanting Garrett to win. But I really thought he had it all together. He ground the broad beans, the crispy broad beans into a flour to use to coat his fish. He got a tomatillo, which is not that rare of an ingredient at all. A pretty common ingredient in salsas, especially. Knows exactly what to do with it. He gives Tom the three C's, cool, calm, and collected. He's ready to rock. And he seems to have this unlock. And Grayson is the exact opposite. She's going, you know, nuts. She's having a really hard time.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, you do see what I did there. And yeah, she's really having a hard time. She's struggling chopping the coconut, looking like Stephen Fishback out there. And she's using the coconut meat for garnish. I feel like Grayson's dish isn't going to come together, but ultimately she wins. And Tom seems pleased with both. I thought this was a gallant exit for Garrett. I thought he got some great compliments on his food and he seemed satisfied with it.
Yeah. And let's also remember that Frances is now on the sidelines. And as we predicted last week, she did fantastically. And I specifically love her back and forth with Grayson, where Frances says, like, you know, I grew up eating coconut. And then Grayson starts back like, you should be up here then. I think that Frances is a perfect addition to the peanut gallery.
Although apparently her default is you can do it. Which we got, like, I think we got four of those in the course of the 12 minutes.
Well, she clearly grew up watching Adam Sandler movies.
Yeah.
Yes, and eating coconuts.
Yeah. I also wonder, like, to what extent we saw last week that I think the ingredients you end up with can almost, I think, very directly impact how well you do with the judges here, well, with the judge here. I mean, last week we saw Frances kind of take a very simple vegetable in terms of broccoli, in terms of using the entire thing, whereas, you know, Garrett chose the beet, which had like multiple components, and he was able to use it really well all the way down to the beet peelings. I think the fact that Grayson pulled two semi-uncommon, not really related, difficult things to use, where I think that the tomatillos might have actually hurt Garrett here. It was a little bit more simple in terms of how to use them. I think the fact that Grayson, you know, got something that she vocally said she didn't want ahead of time, that she seemed to have the more difficult ingredients to work with. I think that she might have been kind of rated on a slightly different scale than Garrett, or that at the end that might have put her over the top. So I'm wondering to what extent impacted her results.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the margin of error is greater, but I think the opportunity to impress is greater as well. And yeah, I think it's especially true for a chef like Grayson, who the knock had been, you know, she cooked plain Jersey sauce meatballs. She cooked food that was pedestrian when she made the kind of salad that she made, the sad salad on the vegan challenge. And she's throughout the challenge really not impressed the chefs that much with a lot of the food that she's created, and she hasn't stepped beyond her comfort zone. So if she had ended up with two ingredients that she was used to, she would have cooked her food that she was used to. And that's not to say that it wouldn't have been good, but Top Chef Last Chance Kitchen is a lot about narrative. Tom always focuses on, like, you got eliminated because of this.
Yeah.
And so this is the challenge that you're going to face to get through your first step of Last Chance Kitchen. And in a way, I really, really like that about Last Chance Kitchen. There's a lot of criticisms about it, but I think that narrative element of it can produce some really interesting competitions. I just hope that it's not preordained in a way that, like, is, okay, we're going to ask Grayson to cook with some crazy ingredients. If she does a good job here, she wins because this is going to be her narrative. You know, if Garrett does a good job here, we expect him to do that because this wasn't his problem. But if Grayson does a good job here, then she wins because she's overcome the expectation. So I don't know. I thought that it worked out really well for both of them. Yeah. Garrett got great compliments for Tom Colicchio, and honestly, he got to cook for Tom multiple occasions. And that's all you can really ask for out of this. And if Tom leaves this thinking Garrett cooks good food, I'm thinking Garrett's probably satisfied with his experience overall.
So, in Top Chef Seattle, we saw a returning player get eliminated early in CJ, and he won like five Last Chance Kitchen challenges in a row. Do you see a similar fate for Grayson based on her like edit that we saw from the show, or do you think she's going to flame out?
Kurt, what do you think?
You know, I can't see her in terms of like making it to the end of Last Chance Kitchen.
Beating 10 more people, no, apparently
not gonna happen.
Yeah, I could see her. I think that Angelina is a great chef. I think that she's got a lot of talent and a lot of skills. She's young, she doesn't have the experience of some of these chefs, but I think the base is good. But I think if she goes to Last Chance Kitchen, I could see Grayson beating her.
Yes,
I could see Giselle really struggling in the Last Chance Kitchen kind of stressful environment, so I can see Grayson beating her. And then maybe Chad, maybe some of these other chefs we haven't seen as much from. I could see one or two other kind of possible victories for Grayson there. But the quality chef is so good on this season that honestly, even if Grayson's at the top of her game, there are some really, really tough battles once you dig past like three or four chefs here. So yeah. I don't see more than three or four wins in a row for Grayson.
Plus, if we're going along with your theory here of possibly like a skewed narrative, if someone gets eliminated, they're going to skew the narrative towards that person then, because the challenge is going to be skewed towards you need to prove your own redemption, and also Grayson is here too. Yeah. So unless it could be a case where, if we're going along with this theory, unless somebody really, the recently eliminated person really bungles their second chance, Grayson might have a short time here in Last Chance Kitchen.
With Kristen, they kind of set up her story going into Last Chance Kitchen. Like it was kind of meant to almost feel like she was unjustly sent away, so at least Last Chance Kitchen was her narrative to get back against kind of Josie's betrayal, what have you. I think you raise a good point, is that Grayson was kind of like rightfully sent home for the corn. I don't think we're necessarily being set up for and then she sweeps all 10 victories.
No, I don't think so either. And I think what I was going to say is, adding to what you were saying, Mike, the fact that the narrative is going to change and shift each week means that the challenges are going to vary so broadly on a week-to-week basis that Grayson's going to be outside that comfort zone a lot. And as a result, she's probably going to face one or two crazy challenges based somewhat on a crazy challenge someone faced on the show, and not going to do well with it. I mean, the first time she gets like you were sent home because you were told to cook something with no gluten, and you know, whatever, Grace is going to be like, I love gluten. I put gluten in everything.
I have steak and bread is my main dish.
Yeah. So, I mean, that I can see, I can foresee that being a week to week problem for Grayson, is that this is the same person who was having a problem week to week with the various challenges on the show. And if the various challenge in the show manifest in some way in what ends up being the Last Chance Kitchen challenge, that each week then Grayson's going to be facing some weird kind of morphed version of a challenge that she would have struggled with in the main show. And so unless her mentality is totally changed and she stays focused like what she delivered this week, I think that she's got a long road to hoe. And like I said, the overall talent of the chefs, Grayson isn't Kristen Kishen. That's not a knock on Grayson, but I mean, there are a lot of James Beard nominees, people that have won Food and Wine Awards, things like that, things that I don't think Grayson has done in her career even. So even though she's been in the kitchen longer than someone like Angelina, you throw her in there with a Karen or a Jason. I don't know. I don't think that that's going to end well for Grayson every time. And so I just don't see that streak coming.
Yeah.
It'll be a while before we find it out, though, because this is the last Top Chef episode of 2015. The next time we're coming back for the big fat gay wedding is on January 7th.
Yeah, and we've got Chrissy Teigen will be there, who I really like. She's funny, and I like how she responds to haters specifically. Her Twitter hater response game is strong, and I like, I really, really like Chef Art, Art Smith, I believe, is coming on this next episode. And Art Smith has participated in Top Chef Masters and other things. I think it was on Top Chef Duels. He's just a really kind of seems like a very nice, very kind person. And he has a lot of good political causes, and he's just wrapped up with a lot of the right things, and he runs some really good charitable organizations and stuff like that. So I really like Chef Art Smith. I'm looking forward to seeing him on the show.
And I'll use your phrase, Antonio. Let's plant a flag in that statement where we said Philip is more douchey than asshole, or delusional than asshole. Because I feel like if the drama in the previews is going to say anything, it seems like Philip might be in the center of some controversy next week.
Might be, yeah. And next week, I mean, it feels like Philip is around that a lot. And I just feel bad for Philip, because I think it's tough. And I do think he's very earnest about a lot of his California stuff. And to people that aren't in that realm and anyone outside of that, it comes off as a different way than I think it's intended. And so hopefully he doesn't end up with a negative experience, not on Twitter, as you pointed out at one point, I think, Mike. So the fact that he's not on Twitter is probably a good thing. He's probably not getting a lot of people calling him out and telling him he's, you know, whatever, based on the edit of a TV show. So good for Philip, you know, to not be on Twitter in this respect, because he's had several moments where he'd be taking a whole lot of shit. So we'll be back with the roundtable in the new year. Maybe we'll be joined by Josh then. Josh is in Japan. If he eats one of those puffer fish in Japan, he may not come back. We may not see Josh again. So we'll see. I understand why he might not want to pop in on the podcast at this point, considering how his draft has worked out. Kurt, can you tell me, you want to reset real quick. Can you give me Josh's team that he's got?
Do you want the people that are still in it or the people?
Let's hear the four that were drafted by Josh. Robot Josh.
Robot Josh had Francis out of the game. Grayson in Last Chance Kitchen. Angelina and Chad, who we think is on the show.
So his team rests on the beard of Chad, basically. Yeah,
probably.
Right now.
Who he hasn't like stood out in terms of the show and the editing, but he also hasn't really done extremely bad. I mean, there was the I believe he was on team Mexican pop-up restaurant that didn't do so hot. But other than
he had his little five-hole moment where he talked about the Mexican restaurant and ended up him and Jeremy kind of bungled the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So not great. Not great, Josh. We'll see ultimately how that plays out. I don't even think Josh has caught up on the show yet, so I don't think he knows how bad he has it. So I think he'll find out.
I saw him in LA this week, and I asked him if he wanted to know who his draft team was, or if he wanted. He's like, no, he hasn't. And we decided that because he hasn't even like caught up on the show yet, we're going to hold off on letting him know who was on his team, which I think will be great if he sits down and watches.
Can he please be on air when we let him know who's on his team?
That would be all. Yes, let's try to do that. Unless like we'll try to shoot him and say, don't listen to the podcasts that we've done. Let us tell you who's okay. You have Chad, okay. You also have Angelina, Grayson, and Francis. I want to hear his reaction on air. That's a great idea.
Yeah, or feel free to tweet Josh who his chefs are, but lie and say that he's got all the best chefs.
Yeah, say like he Josh, has like Jeremy, Kwame, and Isaac.
Jeremy and Isaac. Those two of them on the same team, I think. So we're going all right with that. But anyway, we'll be back in the new year. We'll have some fun with that. Let us know what you think in the comments about this episode. What your thoughts on Grayson as a returnee overall are, considering what we got from Grayson this season. Kurt or Mike, do you have a hashtag we should use for people that want to tweet at us about this episode?
What do you think, guys? Think about sausage stew.
What do I think about it as a hashtag or as a concept?
I love the dish. Sausage stew could work. Maybe like if we want to differentiate it from any other hashtag sausage stew, we could do like TC sausage stew to bring in the Top Chef branding with it.
Sure.
All right. So let's do hashtag TC sausage stew. If you want to tweet at any of us and give us your thoughts about this podcast or this episode, you can tweet at me. I'm at AC Mazzaro, 2 Z's, 1 R. Kurt is at Kurt Clark, and Mike is at A Mike Bloom Type on Twitter. So you can tweet at us using the hashtag TC sausage stew, which I'm hoping Mike is not playing a trick, and by adding the TC, he hasn't put us in some other common hashtag.
Yes, exactly.
Stew.
I've put us now across all the adult websites. I'm putting on the adult website radar by using that hashtag. Yeah. TC has a different meaning than you may think.
Yes, TC stands for transgender and cisgender. So those are both possibilities that someone could be. And so we're just going to have a very interesting kind of mix in our hot tub gumbo here. So thank you very much for listening to this podcast. And all right. And on that note, we'll take our leave. Take care, everyone.